Hi everyone, it's Alex here from over at Lapide. I'm an account executive here at Lapide, and we've got the next episode of CISO Talks. Today we're talking with Matt Walker, who's the CISO over at Goosehead Insurance. So Matt's role covers lots of different things, and I'm sure he will cover it in terms of his cybersecurity role. I'll let him introduce himself. Welcome, Matt.
Hey Alex, thank you for having me.
Perfect. So Matt really today wants to talk about the challenges of bringing up new team members within cybersecurity, and it's hard to sort of find a proficient team in the muddy waters of the CISO and needing to focus on business processes as well as business risks. So how do we as security professionals bring up the next generation, and the talent shortage of experienced cyber professionals does create those kind of risks? So my first question to you, Matt, really is, isn't cybersecurity a realm where there is no entry level because experience is required in other domains first?
Absolutely fair question. I think that as we start to mature cybersecurity functions, we're going to have more and more entry level stuff come up, right? A good example is formalized SOC. Now in our security operations centers, there's a lot of room for that entry level. Can I come in and just do incident response? Can I come in and get eyes on the pane of glass that is my SIM system and just be able to start with some of that initial triage and analysis? It does allow for quite a bit of entry there. But the challenge of, you know, a mature cybersecurity organization needing the additional talent that doesn't come with those entry-level positions, but comes with some of the more experienced infrastructure, more experienced networking backgrounds, is also needed. So we have to face the front on both sides, right? We've got to look inwards to recruit from existing infrastructure and network talent that our organizations may have, but we also need to figure out how to bring in more people on those entry-level positions. There's a lot of excitement around that, and we would be amiss if we didn't take advantage of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And off the back of that, really, then, how have you seen a route that people tend to take to come into cybersecurity? Is there kind of a, you said about infrastructure and trying to hire from there, but is there a route that you kind of see a natural progression into cybersecurity, or does people come from everywhere?
Well, yeah, both, right? The natural progression into cybersecurity, where I've seen a lot of success, is from people that come up through like the help desk ranks through to a sysadmin role of some sort, right? Because that just gives you that length of exposure to all of the different systems that you have to protect as a cybersecurity professional. It is a natural way to kind of grow up and gain that initial talent that you need to be able to program things on the fly in PowerShell, for instance, or look up something in Entra ID efficiently, write a SIM query, right? Those are all things that as you work through those other roles, those kind of activities become almost muscle memory in a way. Yeah, there is a natural progression into cybersecurity through that path, but I would also challenge everyone and say that there is a lot of talent that we can tap into that doesn't necessarily have a natural progression into cybersecurity. And a good example of that would be looking towards like maybe your financial audit people. Those teams are very technical. I think a lot of times we overlook how much value there is in some of the audit activities that an organization performs. And, you know, for those people that are in that position, it's a very easy transition into a GRC type of role, especially if you've got, you know, SOCs or any of the kind of financial regulatory body stuff to answer to. There's a lot of overlap between that and cybersecurity. So again, a very natural fit for somebody, but you don't tend to think about somebody on the finance side being a slate in to the cybersecurity team, but they really can be. Another good example might be somebody from the HR world coming into an identity and access management role, right? HR, at the end of the day, they do understand roles, right? They understand what people's jobs should be. And somebody that's got that cybersecurity curiosity that works in HR would be a really good fit in an IAM program, especially if you're doing RBAC, right? If you've got any sort of role-based cybersecurity things that you're deploying, somebody from HR coming into that role would be a natural fit, right? So I think that as we look at how do we grow the talent pool for cybersecurity, because it's short, I don't know any other CISO who's got a fully staffed team. Maybe I've met one. Right?
Yeah.
But every team I know is short-staffed. So, we have to look at, not just how do we evolve that internal IT talent that can come from the sysadmin side of the house or the infrastructure side of the house, but also how do we look at the other roles that cybersecurity needs to be responsible for, and how can we start to populate those roles with people that may have diverse backgrounds. When we say, let's look at, is there a natural path into cybersecurity through tech? Yeah, there is. But is there a natural path into cybersecurity through any other avenue from a business perspective? I think we can also argue that, yeah, there is.
Yeah. I think it kind of comes to that technical-minded, doesn't it, really? And someone that's kind of technical-minded and understands how processes work and that kind of thing is a natural progression into cybersecurity if that's what they wanted to do. And I suppose when you talk about sysadmins and that kind of thing and working within cybersecurity, I suppose in quite a lot of organizations, a sysadmin is kind of responsible for the cybersecurity if they don't have a team that's a cybersecurity team, because some of these smaller businesses don't necessarily have that. So they definitely get that experience of that. So in terms of kind of someone's made it into cybersecurity now, that they're working in cybersecurity and that they've enjoyed it. Someone that's aspiring to do a more senior role, what can they sort of set themselves up to do for long-term success, really, once they've got into that organization and into the cybersecurity role?
Yeah, I think the piece of advice that I give out is, get damn good at your current job, right? Whatever role that you've landed in cybersecurity, if it's your first position and you're excited and you want to grow in cyber, then get really, really good at whatever role that you have. And the kind of motivation behind that or the reasoning behind that is, if I have a team member who can fire on all cylinders and is able to consistently outperform, then they're going to get tapped first with some of the more challenging things. They're going to get brought into some of the more stressful projects, right? They're going to get brought in on maybe some of the incident response stuff that needs that can-do, willing-to-learn attitude, right? So my first piece of advice to anybody who's got into cybersecurity, who wants to continue to grow, is get really, really good at your current role, right? If it's like, for instance, an entry-level SOC position where you're triaging and investigating cybersecurity incidents, right? If you're able to do that in a very expedient way that, outlines all of the information in a way that your managers are able to take and digest and in a way that data is actionable, right? Like, did we gain any insight from the data that you worked? So were we able to figure out a new patch that had to go out? Were we able to figure out a new workaround? Were we able to figure out a new process or procedure change because of the work that you did, right? Then you're showing that value. So once you get really good at your role and you're showing that value in the information that you're relaying up to your management, you're also going to find out that you have more free time, right? If you're really good at your job, it just kind of, it comes with the territory, right? If you're able to do your job and do it well, suddenly you'll start to notice you have more free time in your normal working hours. And then you're able to take that little bit of free time that you get from being good at your job to stretch yourself, right? Go to your manager and say, hey, what's the next big project I can work on? Or what are some of the challenges that the company is aware of, but we've never wanted to tackle because it's just been difficult, right?
Yeah.
Every company's got a handful of those types of scenarios where, yeah, we've got a problem, but we don't know how to fix it, so we'll just ignore it type of things.
It doesn't exist if you ignore it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as an entry-level cybersecurity person coming in and spending some of your work cycles on figuring out, are there ways to solve these advanced problems that nobody else wants to touch? That's going to show that you've got the initiative and the drive and the curiosity to keep going. So that would be my initial advice. Now, my second piece of advice for people that are kind of in cyber and want to take it to that next level, right, is after you get really good at your job, after you start taking on that extra 10% of work or whatever it equates out to be, don't stop learning that whole time, right?
Yeah.
Make sure that you're keeping up with your continuing education credits. If you've got a certification, right? Don't let that lapse. Yeah. Keep that up. If you don't have a cert, go get a cert, right? I always tell my team, I don't care what cybersecurity industry cert you get. To me, it really doesn't matter, right? If it's CompTIA, if it's ISC squared, if it's ISACA, if it's even like the stuff on Try Hack Me or Hack the Box. Like, I really don't care. Yeah. What I care about is that you're able to show me that you're able to continually learn, right? So if there's a cybersecurity certification out there that you can be excited about, that you're, you know, happy to learn about and you want to learn about, go for it, right? If you're working in my GRC department, but you really are into like Linux hacking on Hack the Box, go for it, right? Any of that additional learning and additional skill set that you obtain, the more valuable you're going to be for my team, right? And if my governance guy knows how to hack Linux, then when he has to audit our Linux security permissions, he's going to be the perfect guy to do it, right? So that's my other piece of advice is, you know, keep learning and find the things that excite you in cybersecurity. It doesn't have to be something that pertains exactly to your role as it sits today, right? There's a lot of overlap. If you look at, you know, nearly any of the cybersecurity certificates that are out there, that they all overlap in areas, right? So you're able to take that and, you know, find the things that are fun to you, find the things that encourage you, and go after those things, right? And then if you've got like a little bit of boring to get through, for lack of a better term, you kind of just say, okay, I'm going to suck it up and read these couple of chapters that really don't interest me, but I know I got to get through the information, right?
Yeah, so, no, exactly. That makes sense. And I think that continual learning, especially in the cybersecurity landscape, is key, really, because cybersecurity landscape is changing all the time. And there's so many different factors in that come in there. You need to keep up with that kind of change and make sure that everyone's keeping up on it and making sure that, staying on it. So, I mean, I just wanted to understand as well in terms of talking a little bit about that entry role in cybersecurity, trying to go into that senior role. What does those roles kind of look like? What's a typical, is it cybersecurity analyst that they would start at, engineer? I mean, I see lots of different titles. It depends on the company, I suppose, but what's kind of the route that it would look like or the stepping stones?
Yeah. The typical progression is to come in as a junior analyst or an associate role, right? It's that first kind of level of, can we trust you with these things, right? And that's really what we're answering in those kind of early on roles is can we trust you to do this job and do it well? So once you've answered that, I think you can move pretty easily from that junior analyst kind of associate role into either a coordinator position or a full analyst position. But that also depends a lot on the company, right? If you're at a if you're at a much smaller company, you may be able to go from that junior analyst role straight into an analyst role in a short period of time because the company needs it, right? Whereas if you're at a larger, more well-established organization, there may be a very clearly defined career path that says, oh no, if you're a junior analyst, you're that for 3 years. And then, okay, if you've had good reviews after 3 years, then you get bumped up to the analyst position. And then if you've had good reviews for 3 years, then you get to the senior analyst position, right? So it depends a lot on the size of the org, but it also depends on kind of which bucket or which pillar of cybersecurity you work in, right? And again, the size of the org also impacts that, right? At a much smaller company, you might be a cybersecurity associate, but you might have responsibilities in every pillar in cybersecurity. You might have GRC responsibilities. You might have SOC responsibilities. You might have some of the architect responsibilities for vetting out new network design, right? Like at a small company, that can all fall onto a junior's shoulders, right? Whereas at a larger company, you might be a junior cybersecurity analyst that works just in the GRC area, and all you do is analyze third-party risk that comes into the company, right? You might not ever see the SIM. So it depends on the size of the company and the specific role that you've been placed into, but that growth from the junior role into the senior role, I would say, you know, it takes time, right? If you can find yourself at a small company that's growing quickly, or at a you know, even maybe a startup environment, then maybe there's a lot of possibility for quick growth in that environment because it's going to challenge you with a lot quickly. So, you know, I would really say for people that want to make that advancement, you know, don't be afraid to find a company that challenges you, that, you know, feels like it's throwing a lot more on your plate than you can handle, because that means that you're in a growth role, right? If you get to a spot to where everything on your plate is very well organized and you're like, oh yeah, I've got this, then you're not challenging yourself, right? Maybe that's a great spot for you. Maybe you just want to be comfortable and execute well in the role. But if you want to grow, you need to be having that feeling of, how do I deal with all of this, right? There needs to be that little bit of stress to push you further.
Yeah.
You know, and it may come in the form of imposter syndrome for some people, right? Yeah. They get into cyber and they start to feel like, am I really the right person for this? Is this really what I'm good at? And, you know, I would challenge anybody who's struggling with that feeling that if you don't have a little bit of imposter syndrome when you're working in cybersecurity, then you're not challenging yourself. You're not growing, right? That imposter syndrome is the symptom of being challenged so hard. So, you know, go after that. Seek it.
Yeah, I'm sure. It keeps you on your toes a lot anyway with everything going on. And I mean, that comes into my next question quite nicely, actually, in terms of you being a CISO yourself and other CISOs around that might have a limited budget or not necessarily quite new, or maybe kind of new to the organization. The limited budget and the staffing ability continue to be flexible. And how do you kind of adapt to that? How do you adapt with that in the current environment of having a limited budget and sometimes hard to staff?
Yeah, you have to be really willing to work across business lines sometimes. So can I go to my developer organization and can I tap someone there to help do some AppSec stuff, right? I might not have a full-time AppSec guy, but if I can work with one person in the development team who's excited about it and can give me, you know, a day out of a sprint, every other sprint to focus on AppSec, that's awesome. I'll take it. Cross lines and work with your marketing people, right? There's a lot of cybersecurity awareness training that you need to do. And if your budget is cut, then, you know, a lot of people don't stop to think that, oh, I can leverage internal marketing to help with some of that cybersecurity awareness push. You know, you don't have to go through some of the formalized tools that are out there, although they're nice to have, and it really helps your program. If your budget is cut, there's other ways to get that message out still, right? And you just have to figure out which business line at the company that I'm working at can help get that message out the most efficient, right? So is it your marketing team? Is it your HR team? Is it having general counsel send a company-wide email for you, right? Because sometimes those get really good attention.
Yeah.
So you just have to think through, okay, you know, what is the problem that I'm really trying to overcome? And is there a way that I can work with another line of business to overcome that problem, either through them letting me borrow talent, right? if I've got a project where I need, you know, three or four full-time employees, but I can't score that because of budget. Maybe I can score five or six, you know, part-time people from a different department to help with data entry or to help with, you know, some of the data warehousing cleanup activities that we have to do, or to help with, you know, just reading through logs and highlighting things that our AI needs to know to learn from, right? There's all kinds of work that cybersecurity can pull other people in to help with. And I think that as we face that limited budget, that budget crunch, we have to get really good at teaming up with the business and helping them to understand that cybersecurity is not always there to say, no, you can't do that, right? We're there to help the business move forward and do so securely, right? But also, if we can help speed things up, if we can make the process better for everybody, like, let's do it. Let's jump in and make that a reality. But you've got to be willing to flex the other way too, right? If I go to a department and say, hey, I'm short on budget, can I borrow a couple of people? Be ready for, you know, when they come asking for your help someday, right? Because it'll happen. But, you know, as long as you're aware of that and you set expectations properly, I think you can really make a lot of progress still, even when your budget is getting slashed.
Yeah, now that makes sense. That's kind of, hopefully in lots of organizations that people feel flexible enough to go and ask for other departments and try and make sure that they can club together to make sure that everything's happening, because at the end of the day, it's a big part of the organization, the cybersecurity. So yeah, you'd hope that they'd say yes, but I suppose they've been in positions before where they've been sort of overran as well and over budget and things like that. So that actually kind of moves on nicely again as well to the second topic that we were going to discuss today, sort of following on from the first topic of actually trying to find your team. So once we've actually found this team, and part of your role as a CISO is going to be trying to make them become technically proficient within cybersecurity if they're in sort of the entry role. So we've got a technically proficient team and you're just kind of training them up in that. But then you've also wanted to focus on business processes and business risk. So how, as a CISO, do you balance the time? You've got conflicting workloads and lots of different things to do that require a lot of your technical knowledge as well as you needing to help train people up. So how do you kind of balance that time, really?
It's tough. You know, I tell my team that I live by my Outlook calendar. And I stick to that mantra, right? Like you've got to really be a master of that calendar yourself first, and hold that time management close to your chest, right? But I think, you know, looking at, you know, okay, I'm really busy. I know that my team is really busy, but how do I continually evolve my team and help them develop tech skills? While also helping them understand the business process or the business reason. That's the golden ticket if you can figure it out, right? Is a good example might be working with your SOC team on simple like email phishing alerts that come through, right? So your email detection system, you know, sends you notices that, hey, some phishing emails were delivered or something. So having that lower level SOC person respond to those alerts and reach out and understand, you know, did the system automatically quarantine that stuff? Did it get delivered to the end user? And do we need to reach out to them to figure out if they interacted with it? You know, and then can we do some of that without reaching out to the end user at all, right? Can we use the tools that we have deployed to see, you know, did they click a link, right? Can we go look on the firewall and track it down and see if that computer that user is registered to actually went to that URL or not? And doing that helps build that technical skill set for that lower level employee, right? They're not just responding to, oh, a phish email got delivered. We need to make sure they didn't click on it or that they deleted it. But now we're also helping them utilize the rest of the tools in the tool stack to gather as much information as they can without having to pester the user first, right?
Yeah.
So it helps build up that technical skill, but then it also, you know, helps them to understand how we deploy defense in depth, right? I think every organization's got kind of that defense in depth mindset down pretty well these days. In, you know, 15 years ago, people might have still had a lot of holes in their defensive layers, but I think most organizations have it down pretty well today. And having your lower level SOC employee work through that entire kill chain, for lack of a better term there, using each of your tools in the defense layers that you have, help them to develop those skills for, okay, now if you really need to get into the firewall and look for a log or figure out which rule to change or troubleshoot a specific, you know, non-functional thing, because you've been exposed to it on those little instances to build out that full kill chain of activity, now you're going to be able to do it much more efficiently when the time comes, right? So you've kind of helped to build that skill set through the day in kind of over and over repetitious activity. So that when an incident really is occurring, you've got that skill set to reply right away. Now, the other thing that golden ticket of, can I also tie in what the business process is here to help my cybersecurity team understand why the business is doing it this way? That's also, you know, really helpful, especially when you're identifying new risk. You know, so a good example there might be for somebody that's doing the third party risk management process, when a business unit wants to spin up a relationship with a new vendor and my team has to, you know, go in and look at that vendor from, you know, every angle, right? Do they have a SOC 2? Yeah. Do they have an ISO? Have they been breached in recent history? You know, do they have a good credit score, for lack of a better term? You know, having the team do all of that doesn't necessarily help them see the big picture for why the business is maybe pursuing that relationship. So as part of that third party analysis, it's important that whoever is doing it talks to that business owner and says, hey, why exactly are we going with this company, right? What's the business process and why did we land on this provider, not that provider? And then that helps them to understand some of those business decisions that get made. And then again, it's just time and exposure to that starts to build that skill set and build that business acumen for those folk.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's kind of where I start.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of not the word throwing them in the deep end, but probably throwing them just in the middle end, just so they can kind of touch their feet on the floor. They're kind of getting used to everything that's going on, used to the processes and the way it's done within the organization, making sure that they're also actually, yes, getting to see some real life experiences, because later the day you're going to need them at some point, and they're going to want to kind of grow up and be the ones responsible for that one day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's nice. And I mean, actually, in terms of, okay, you've introduced them to lots of different things. You're also trying to keep your own role of the business risk alive and that kind of thing. So really, does the CISO and does the role of CISO need to be a technical expert, or can sort of the CISO delegate tasks downwards? How does that look?
It's a great question. Again, I think it depends on the organization that the CISO is at. A smaller organization will require a much more technical CISO. And what I mean by that is a CISO that's maybe not so far removed from security engineer that they still remember how to configure and troubleshoot some things. Because a small organization just demands that, right? But a larger organization, I think the CISO role evolves beyond that kind of security engineering focus into a more business process and procedure-driven role. So can the CISO lead the GRC function of the organization and help those people to understand what activities that they need to complete? That doesn't necessarily mean the CISO needs to know how to use whatever GRC platform you're landed on. But they definitely need to help the team use the platform to gather the right data and insights that the CISO can take back to their board or C-suite to share, hey, this is where we stand with risk as our organization, for example. You know, so to answer the question, right, does the CISO role need to be technical? I would say for most companies, yes. You want to remain technical enough that when a cybersecurity challenge requires that technical acumen to solve, that you as a CISO don't find yourself lost in the weeds trying to figure out what's going on, right? If you've got that technical skill set and that technical understanding, then you're going to be able to work through that issue a lot easier. Whereas if you don't have that technical acumen, you're going to have to rely on a partner, a vendor, or your team to do that for you. Now, like I said, if you're a CISO at a large enough organization, then you can definitely move away from being so technical to really drive, you know, how can cybersecurity improve the business? How can cybersecurity drive sales, for instance? That's always a fun conversation to have. And you know, that pulls you away from the technical side as a CISO, and it forces you to look at, you know, how does the business really address the risk? You know, how does this process lend itself to keeping, you know, company information secure or not? And it has you think through those kind of topics, and they're not so technical, right? You're not talking about TCP handshakes when you're talking about those subjects, right? You're not getting into the weeds of the technical stuff, but you are definitely taking on more responsibility because you're driving a business decision as a whole. So, yeah, great question. Does the CISO need to remain technical? All depends on the size of the org and what the business is really trying to get with their cybersecurity program.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think as we talk about or previously talked about in the first topic of entry-level cybersecurity professionals, I think having a CISO that's technically expert or has a lot of technical knowledge, I think that definitely would go hand in hand of being able to actually train up those people fairly well and actually make sure that they're on the right track and things like that. If the CISO isn't technical, then I suppose there could be a few barriers then of how they actually train them up and how there is entry levels and I suppose in organizations where the CISO isn't technical, there probably isn't any entry-level cybersecurity roles, and they're probably always hiring senior ones because they need somebody to come in that's already trained, that's already proficient in lots of those different things. In terms of, let's say, for in your example, you are technically proficient as a CISO, what's an effective way that a CISO can actually effectively communicate these technical topics to their peers or other business executives within the organization? And when I say peers, it could be, yeah, someone that's a senior role, could be when they're an entry role level. How do you sort of, yeah, effectively communicate those technical topics to them?
Sure. It's always a challenge, right? What I challenge myself with is when I need to relay technical risk, if I can't do it in 3 slides or less in a PowerPoint presentation, right? And that's just me, right? I've got to boil it down to 3 slides. Otherwise, I'm going to be talking too much. I've got to boil it down to 3 slides. And I've also got to remember to take out any of the kind of technical acronyms that get thrown around so much in our line of work.
Yeah.
You know, and really figure out a good way to tell a story first. You know, so a good example that I can share is, you know, there was a potential exposure that we were facing, and the analogy that I gave to everyone was, you know, when you're ordering off of Amazon, they just leave the package on your porch, and everybody that drives by your house sees that you got an Amazon package, and, you know, they don't necessarily know what's in the package, but they know you got something, and if there was a bad guy who wanted to take it, they could just walk up to your door and take it. And with the potential exposure that we were looking at, it was very similar. Like, hey, we've got this bit of data that's out there that anybody on the internet might be able to see. Now, they can't see what's in the data unless they go in and open the package, but, you know, the fact is that anybody could see it. And, you know, from a business risk perspective, there's a lot that we could do to mitigate that and work around it, or we could just solve it altogether and not have the Amazon delivery guy leave that package there, right?
Yeah.
and being able to relay that story in a way that made it something that they could all understand, right? They've all ordered packages off of Amazon and had them delivered.
Yeah.
So, you know, it made it hit home a little bit for them. Like, okay, our business has a package waiting that anybody could grab. Well, we don't really want that. We want to change that process. And that helped to kind of delineate that risk, right? So instead of me talking very technical about, you know, URI redirects and potential, you know, open S3 buckets and, you know, getting into all of the technical stuff, it was easy enough just to say, hey, this is an analogy. This is kind of what we're facing. And then we can fix it with a technical solution. And that fix means that Amazon package just doesn't get delivered to that doorstep anymore, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, when I am trying to relay a very technical topic to my peers or to the board, I've found it best to strip it down to the bare bones, right? Three PowerPoint slides or less, and then also find a way to tell a story about it rather than just going through the data.
Yeah. No, I think that makes sense. I think that's definitely a good way to go about it, is just kind of breaking it down and actually making it more relatable, because like you say, there's plenty of terms in cybersecurity that wouldn't be relatable to anybody else that apart from that works in cybersecurity. So I definitely think that's a good way to go about it. And I think, yeah, I mean, that helps the business understand it, and that's all you need sometimes, isn't it? Should we go about it this way? And all you need is a yes or no answer to make sure that you're going about it the right way and actually doing the right
exactly
thing.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And yeah, I also really like that the Amazon delivery driver analogy. I think it's a good one. You've you hit the nail on the head with it, really, there. That would be once that, and like you said, everybody relates to it. I've had an Amazon package deliveries taken before, and if they hadn't just left it outside the door, it would have been all good. So, yeah, that's a very good, relatable one. In terms of looking at the next picture and the next question, really, I just wanted to understand, spoken a lot about the CISO role contains lots and lots of different things, and I can imagine it, like you said, you live by your Outlook calendar, and there's always stuff going on. In terms of your workload as a CISO, is there any areas of it that you can delegate out a little bit more that you can pass down to some people, some of the analysts? Or do you tend not to do that because at the end of the day, if they did something as part of your role and you delegated that out and they did it wrong, you're kind of not heads on the chopping block, but you're going to be one in trouble. So do you delegate much out, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So I do, right? I try to remain as transparent as possible with the team, right? Because, you know, cybersecurity risk is, you know, what if I get hit by a bus, right? Like, you have to consider that kind of business continuity as part of your job. And it, you know, it's, so yeah, while there definitely is a risk in delegating out some of the more sensitive things that we deal with as CISOs. And in those instances, I tend to not delegate out the work, but I tend to be very open and sharing with what's going on with what I'm doing, right? So, yeah, the team doesn't have to take responsibility for it, but they know what's going on. And so should they need to, like, stop and change gears and work on that, it's not going to completely blindside them. Now, would I completely delegate out the decision-making on some of those things? No. Right? There's still that level of responsibility that I have to own. And, you know, part of that is, you know, I want to back my team. So if the team comes to me and says, hey, we really think that this is the right decision for this project, here's why. Of course, I'm going to agree with them. If that's the right decision, right, I'm going to look at it and come to my own conclusion as well. But I want the team to know that I've got their back. So, you know, should something go awry, I don't want the decision to be, oh, the cybersecurity team messed up and look at how terrible they are. I want that decision, that onus to be with me, right? The buck has to stop somewhere, right? So as the leader of the security organization, it's on me to say, yeah, I made that decision. And if it goes bad, if it goes south, then I have to own up to it. And it was my responsibility.
Yeah, so, no, that makes sense. I think, as a CISO, you've got to take responsibility on that side of it, haven't you? Otherwise, yeah, your team's on the chopping block too.
That's right.
That makes sense.
And yeah. The thing that I do with my team quite frequently is, you know, when, you know, we're responding to an incident and say we have to shut off something that's a critical service, right? I'll tell them, shut it off. Let everybody know I told you to shut it off, right? you know, that way, you know, the transparency around how things are getting decided on is there. And also that ownership of, hey, you know, we're responding to an incident, but you know, that ownership of that response can still fall on my shoulders. So that way the team can feel like they've got, you know, the leeway and the freedom that they need to do the job, to do the incident without feeling like there's any sort of micromanagement occurring, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I can imagine as well, in you do get some people saying, oh, why has that happened? Why has that happened? Like you said, when you're investigating a lot of the security issues, you need to shut down this or shut down that. Is that something that you come across quite often, really? People kind of getting a bit annoyed that you've had to do that, or you within the organization, not necessarily within the cybersecurity function, but sort of the other functions when you've had to investigate and shut this down and shut that down.
A little bit, right? But yeah. I think most people, if you explain it to them, like, hey, you know, we're doing maintenance to fix a cybersecurity issue that came up, most people get it these days. And as long as your downtimes are within your SLAs, then, you know, you're okay. So, you know, and that's where you need to have that discussion with the business and with all of the teams and figure out, okay, what is an acceptable amount of downtime? And, you know, what is our SLA? So if there's an incident that is going to force downtime, what's acceptable?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah, I suppose you don't want it to be too long. Otherwise, it starts affecting the actual business workings and that
exactly.
kind of thing. So, yeah, I suppose you've got to find the right balance there of actually getting the job done, but also not that downtime too long. So, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. In terms of that topic, that's all good, really. It's great to hear about that. In terms of an actual kind of what we've discussed today, it's been really, really interesting to speak with you, Matt, and I really, really appreciate it. Obviously understood what it looks like as an entry-level role and whether there's actually a defined route into cybersecurity, and kind of figured out that there's probably not a defined route, but there's kind of as usual a first few steps that people go into. There are entry-level that exist, and it's kind of finding that way in, really. Someone that wants to kind of work into a senior role is just making sure that they're actually working hard on a daily basis and doing everything that they need to do and making sure that they're filling all the space they need to do. And if there is some time that they have on their hands, not to sit and do nothing, but actually to reach out to the CISO and find out some more stuff that they could be doing. In terms of CISOs yeah. with limited budgets and a difficult staffing, hard to find staff, it's just using other departments in the organization to actually use those skills and try and work together. But that also comes with, you've got to be then flexible if they need you to be able to come in and work. So looking at the second topic, does a CISO actually need to be technical? Not necessarily, you said, because some organizations need it and some don't. I suppose in a smaller organization, I think technical expert is definitely a good thing to have. And sometimes in those bigger organizations, when you've got a bigger department, you don't always need that. In terms of being able to actually effectively communicate with your team and also as well as other business executives, it's just kind of simplifying it down a little bit and simplifying it, and really, really great example of using the Amazon delivery driver of, would you want, we've got a parcel on the porch, which is some data, everyone can access it, but they don't know what it is. Really, really like that. And then that kind of last question about delegating it out is, yeah, lots of areas that you can delegate out, but at the end of the day, you take responsibility within that. If something does go wrong, obviously you delegate it out. So that's great that you take that kind of responsibility. Thanks for speaking with us today, Matt. It's been great. And I hope everyone enjoys our CISO talks with Matt.
Appreciate it. Thank you for the time today.